Time for us to begin in here as we continue our study in the book of 2 Samuel. We left off basically at 17.5, chapter 17.5, so we'll be picking back up in chapter 17. I have the map up because tonight we're going to be talking a little bit. Hopefully we get this far. If we do, we'll be talking about David coming back in. You notice this city right here, Gilgal. We'll be talking about that later on, so hopefully we get to that point. But if we look at 2 Samuel right now, and we talk about historically what's going on in David's life, we're in the middle of something pretty important in David's life right now. Do you remember what it is? A coup, yes. There has been a revolt. Who has revolted against David? His own son, Absalom. And so we're in the middle of what's going on with that. Now, we kind of hurriedly mentioned, whenever David was leaving Jerusalem, and we talked about why, some reasons why David may have left. You know, David's a man of war. He could have fought his own son, right? And we talked about some reasons why he might have left to protect the city from being under siege and those who might perish because of it. We talked about a man named Hushai, remember? Hushai came to David and said, I'm going to come with you. And what did David tell him to do? He sent, he's mentioned several times that this guy, Hushai, is David's friend. Everybody knows him as David's friend. It's like his badge on his shirt. This guy is David's friend. What did he end up doing? Do you remember? Yes. Yes. So he goes back. David says, I'm going to send you back into Jerusalem, and I want you to undermine the advice of Ahithophel. I mean, that's not a name you guys know very, like, nobody uses that. So undermine the advice of Ahithophel. And remember, Ahithophel is, I mean, everybody considers the advice of Ahithophel as though God said it. You know, they kind of take his advice on everything. And we're sort of in the middle of a situation where Ahithophel asks permission from Absalom, hey, let's take 12,000 men, let's go over there and just finish this. Let's chase down your father David and finish this. And Hushai, what is his response? Do you remember? If we look here in chapter 17, he basically says, you know, that's not a good advice. You know, normally Ahithophel does very well in giving us advice, but this is not good advice. And he says, this is not good advice in verse 7, because you remember your dad. Your dad is a valiant warrior, a mighty warrior, and he will fight against it. It's like a she-bear separated from her cubs. He will fight. And if you go down there with 12,000 men, they're going to kill you, and then everybody's going to say, David routed, there's been destruction in Jerusalem because of what's going on. And you don't want that. That's bad PR. I'm paraphrasing. But that's basically what Hushai is saying to Ahithophel and those who are listening to his advice. That's not good advice. So what does Hushai say? What should we do? What is decided to do in place of sending 12,000? What does he say there? Instead of sending 12,000, what are we going to do? Verse 11. I'm going to go and let's send everybody. From Dan to Beersheba, let's send everybody out chasing after David. That is not very, you know, numbers. If you're looking at numbers, 12,000 men or all of Israel? Who would you rather have chasing you? If I could vote for neither, none of them, none of the above, I'll pick that. But you know, numbers, a sheer numbers game, that the better odds are 12,000 for David, right? Why is Hushai saying, let's send everybody out. Let's gather everybody from Dan to Beersheba. That's like saying from sea to shining sea, let's send everybody out after him. Why is he doing this? It cleans out all of Israel. And what were you saying? Give David time. You know, if you're traveling with a caravan of people, does it take some time? You're not hopping in the caravan, right? And So you've got to take some time, especially if you're traveling with children and all your family and all that. So this procedure gives them time to get away. And we're going to see more about that in just a moment. But he says, this is what I want you to do. And in verse 14, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. This is what everybody determines. And they decide that, yes, this is what we're going to do. And it says also in verse 14, for the Lord had ordained that to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel so that the Lord might bring calamity upon Absalom. So Ahithophel's advice was sound advice. Let's chase after him while they're in caravan. They're not in a defendable position. They're not in a situation where they can just, get away very easily. So this is a time to go and attack them. Was sound advice, but God was involved in subverting the advice of Ahithophel. God was still protecting David. Still protecting David in this situation. Now, as we continue, we didn't talk about this last Wednesday, but as we look at this and we continue the story, we talked about some things that were left behind. There were some things that were left behind that David kind of sowed into the plan to come back to Jerusalem eventually for his return. Part of it was Hushai and having him be in Jerusalem and being a key player. What were the other two elements, or at least the other element? Concubines, that may have been a poor choice to leave behind. But what was some other? There were some messengers, right? Look in verse 15. Then Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar the priests, "This is what Ahithophel has counseled Absalom." And then he says to him in verse 16, "Now therefore send quickly and tell David, saying, 'Do not spend the night at the fords of the wilderness. But by all means, cross over, or else the king will be, and the people who are with him will be destroyed.'" So he had these messengers that were stay behind to relay messages to David, to give him real-time information about what's going on. This is battlefield intel is what he's needing, right? And so Hushai is telling him, don't take your time leaving. Now, what is he saying? What is a ford other than a car? A brand. A break. It's normally where you cross a river, right? If you're going to ford a river, you're going to cross a river. And so that's what he's saying. Don't spend it on this side, on the Jerusalem side. Spend it on the wilderness side. Why would he say that? Why would he say that? Distance. Protection. These are all key. It takes some time. If you're traveling with a group of people, you don't just skip across the river. It takes time to get across the river, apparently. And we'll see that momentarily. But there's some interesting things that happen as these messengers are sent out. They're kind of caught. And so they said, go out and tell David. And they would go and tell David the king, for they would not be seen entering the city. But a lad did see them and told Absalom, and the two of them departed quickly and came to the house of a man in Bahurim. So they were found out. They were seen leaving the city. They were found out. Some young man decided, well, I need to go tell Absalom about this, and he tells them, and they jet, and they hide out. Where does the text say they hide out? In a well. Anybody want to hide out in a well? Now, apparently they go to this lady's house, and it's a well that seemingly from the text, it may be a well that was just kind of flush with the ground. It wasn't like a quintessential well with a little roof on top and a little hand crank thing. We're talking about a well that was maybe just flush with the ground, because she puts some things over it and makes it look like it's a threshing floor kind of place, some grain over it, and kind of hides it. And they're down in the bottom of this well, waiting for everybody, for the coast to be clear. And so they are hidden. And they go back over, and they do tell David about what's going on after they leave from there. And they tell him in verse 21, "Arise and cross over the water quickly, for thus Ahithophel is counseled against you." And so David and all the people, in verse 22, who were with him arose and crossed the Jordan. And by dawn, not even one remained who had not crossed the Jordan. Now, what is this? So they arrive at night, and it says by dawn they had all crossed. So what does that tell us about crossing this river? it's a lot of people. We're talking about taking some time to cross the river. So this is all playing into why Hushai counseled for everybody to come out, to give them some time to get across the river and get into a better fortified location so they can actually fight these people head on. So that David needs to get in a place where him and his people are safe before they actually go into battle. And so Hushai and his council is giving them that time in order to cross the river and get in that place. Now, verse 23, we have a little snippet about Ahithophel. What does Ahithophel do now that his advice was not heeded? He killed himself very methodically, right? And just by looking at this, I get the idea that Ahithophel is a very methodical creature, very methodical in how he approaches things. But what would lend us to believe that? He put everything in order. I mean, he didn't just out of rage just go in and just, you know, he didn't just, you know, slit his wrist right there on the spot. He thought about this. He rode his donkey home. He put his household in order and made sure everything was what it's supposed to be, and then just hung himself. So he no longer felt like he, well, for whatever reason, he hung himself. Thus ends the life of the Ahithophel. But David comes to a city of Mahanaim. Now, this city, although having a name, again, that we wouldn't use very often, this city we have mentioned before. Anybody recognize this city? We saw this. This is where Ishbosheth had set up his city seat. This is where he had set up his city seat. Remember when Ishbosheth, when the transition between Saul and David did not go smoothly? This is where Ishbosheth had been at this time. We see that in chapter 2, verse 8 of 2 Samuel. So they go over, and now Absalom set Amasa over the army in place of Joab. Joab was whose commander? David's commander of the army. And so Joab goes with David. So you now no longer have a commander of the army. So he assigns this guy to be commander of the army. And then we have this little interesting kind of... Now Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Ithra the Israelite, who went Abigail, the daughter of Nash, a sister of... So we get this sort of context about the relationship between Amasa and Joab. And if you translate that, it means that he is the son of Abigail, the sister of David. So Amasa and Joab are cousins, both of which are the nephews of David. So that's basically gives us a relationship. It gives us an idea of who this Amasa is and how he's related to Joab, and so we get this information. And so all in Israel and Absalom camped in the land of Gilead, and so that's where they have him. Verse 27. Now David had come to Ammon, Shobi the son of Nash. So we have these people from Ammon some other people come down. And they give David and his people, they give him some food. In the end of chapter 17, it says the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. And so, again, in many ways, God is taking care of David through other people in this situation. These are people that David has had dealings with before, and they are taking care of David. There is a respect for David. Now, chapter 18 is an interesting chapter as we start this. David begins to put things in order for war. When you go to war, you need to have all your men in place, right? Everything in place, the commander set. And so he's sort of putting together a makeshift army. He's putting together an army of those who kind of came out with him. There were people who were faithful to David, who had always been with David, his mighty men, those who were closest to him, had come out with him. And so he begins to assemble sort of an army with those that he has with him. So he numbers the people and sets over them commanders of hundreds and thousands. And then we see this division here. Joab, one-third under the command
of Joab, one-third under Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, and Joab's brother. And then one-third under command of Ittai. Remember, Ittai the Gittite was somebody that would just kind of recently came onto the scene. And so he becomes a commander of a third of the army at this moment as well. And David says, what is he going to do in verse 2? David says, I'm going to go out with you. I'm going out with you. We're going to face this head on. And what do the people say to him? No. No. They say, what do they say concerning his worth? Yeah, basically saying if we die, it's not, you know, we die. But if you die, you're like 10,000 of us is what they literally say here. So we don't want you to go out. And so he says, I won't. I'll do whatever you think is worthy. And so he stays at the city and is ready at the city. And so he does whatever seems best to them. Now, he asked them this in verse 5. Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people heard when the king charged all the commanders concerning Absalom. That's gonna come back later on as tonight. David still has concern for Absalom, this young man Absalom. Even though he's revolting against, he's done this thing, this great and terrible thing against David, David still has concern for his son. Now, verse 6, the people went out into the field against Israel. The battle took place in the forest of Ephraim. The people of Israel were defeated there before the servants of David, and the slaughter that day was great, 20,000 men. For the battle there was spread over the whole countryside, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. So they have Ents in the land of Ephraim, apparently, if you're into Tolkien at all. Anybody? Tolkien fans? Walking trees? Ringing a bell? Anybody? Okay. Never mind. Y'all need more caffeine or something this evening. So, J.R. Tolkien, The Walking Trees, anybody into that? Nobody? Okay. So the forest devoured more people. How is a forest devouring people? What's that? Maybe. Well, as we read more of the story, we sort of get some clues. But basically, what's happening is that this is probably very dense forest, hiding some pitfalls and things of that nature. And we'll kind of see what unfolds with Absalom in relationship to that. But the forest played a part in helping the overthrow of these people. Now, verse 9. What happens to Absalom? He gets caught. Now, let's pause there for just a second. We had a description of Absalom early on. Remember what was going on with Absalom? He had a lot of hair. I mean, he basically was, I can't believe it's not butter. You know, that guy. He was that guy. Okay, so that's the description of Absalom. It talks about the weight of his hair that he got cut every year, and so he has, you know, these long flowing mane, apparently. And what happens to said mane, to hair? It gets caught in a tree, for Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak, much like we have out here, I imagine. And his head caught fast in the oak, so he was left hanging between heaven and earth. So if anybody ever says, "Don't leave me hanging, man," it's a biblical reference to Absalom, is what we're talking about here. So the mule keeps going is the imagery that we have, and he's left hanging by his hair. Now, if you're left hanging by your hair in the middle of a battlefield, it's a rather precarious situation, right? Probably not where you want to be. Pinata is what we're getting comments. You could either scream and yell and hope somebody comes and finds you to help you, like one of your team, like hopefully Team Blue finds you before Team Red does. But here's what's going on. So, as the text unfolds the story, what happens in verse 10? Who finds him? Joab. Joab gets told, said, "Joab, behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak," which, I mean, that's not something you see every day, right? I imagine if this, when this was playing out in real life, Joab was like, "Excuse me, say that again."
He says, "What, you saw him?"
Yeah. So he says, He says, then Joab said to the man, told him, now behold, you saw him? Why did you not strike him there to the ground? And I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt, like a really nice belt, apparently, not just any old belt. And why did the man say no? Why did he say no? Because they had heard what David had said. They had heard what they said. Even if I should receive 1,000 pieces of silver, they all know what David does to people. Who kills them unjustly, who kills people unjustly, right? So they're probably like reserved whether or not they're going to kill Absalom. They know David cares, is affectionate towards Absalom. And so there's not a lot of people who's going to do that. And he says, I would not put out my hand against the king's son. For in hearing the king charged you, Abishai and Ittai, saying, protect the young man Absalom. And so he was afraid for his own life if he had done that. And then Joab said, I will not waste time here with you. So he took 3 spears in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while yet he was alive in the midst of the yoke. And then other young men came and also did similar things, made so a piñata scene, basically, with Absalom. So Absalom dies here in this moment. And right when all this happens, the commander dies, Absalom dies. What does Joab do in verse 16? What does he do? He blows the trumpet, right? He blows the trumpet and the people return from pursuing Israel. Why? Didn't we see this earlier? We saw him do very similar thing with Abner, right? Because, again, they're fighting. If maybe they were fighting against the Philistines, they probably would have chased him down and killed as many as they possibly could, right? This is not that scenario. We're not dealing with a scenario where we need to kill each other. And so this was, so they stop the pursuing the people. They stopped killing their own, and so they took Absalom and cast him into a deep pit in the forest. And so again, here we have maybe why the forest was consuming so many people. It was very thick underbrush. Maybe the fighting was difficult. There were some precarious pits apparently in that area, and so there's various reasons why that it mentions that. I'm not promoting talking and walking trees. It just seems that way when you read the text without looking deeper into what it's actually saying. And so here in this situation, we read about some stones that were set up. And they said they created a very great heap of stones, and all of Israel fled, each to his own tent. And now Absalom in his lifetime, so before this event took place, verse 18, Absalom had set up a pillar in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to preserve my name. And so he named the pillar after his own name. It was called Absalom's Monument to this day. Now, to this day is indicative of the fact that this was written after these events, much later after these events unfolded. But as we read here, Absalom did have children. We read this in 2 Samuel 14, verse 27. He did have children. It's possible that those children had not survived. They were no longer living at this time, and that is why Absalom erects this pillar. Now, what's also interesting is that this is not uncommon. This is not uncommon at all. Kings in that time period did erect pillars, either promoting themselves, promoting different feats that they had done. And so that is very, very common in that. And we have archaeologists have found other pillars of other kings from the same kind of time period and same area about that happening. But we have not found this pillar. And there is a current monument that is called Absalom's Monument or Absalom's Pillar, but it was built like 1,000 years later. It wasn't even the original monument. It wasn't even the original pillar. So it's interesting that he erects this pillar to try and remember who he was, so everybody remember who he was. But in the end, it's his life events in the Bible that we remember him more by, not this pillar or whatever he decided to set up. So we find that that's very interesting. Now, David has to receive information about the death of his son. And if you could imagine in previous instances where somebody important to David had died, you didn't want to be the messenger, right? You did not want to be the messenger because he sort of had a tendency to kill the messenger, partly because the messenger would lie about it sometimes and say he's the one that did it. But in this situation, we have a guy who's just gung-ho to tell David about what's going on. I want to be me, teacher, me. We have a guy doing that who wants to run and tell. Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, "Please let me run and bring the king news that the Lord has freed him from the hand of his enemies." But Joab said, "No, you're not the one that's going to carry the news. This Cushite is going to take the message." And so he tells this Cushite to go. And then he comes back and said, "But please, can I go? Can I at least just go?" Is basically what he's saying. "Can I just go? I'll just go and run." And he said, "Why? You're not even going to be carrying a message. It's no profit." But he said, "Oh, you know, I just want to run." And so he tells him, "All right, you can go." And so so he said, "I'll run." And so he goes. But when he goes, he runs a different way. He runs a way of the plane and kind of, you know, tries to do the Speedy Gonzales thing and cut off this guy. Anybody? Speedy Gonzales? Anybody in here? Okay. All right. You're with me. All right. So he decides to do that and cut off this Cushite. Now, we fast forward, this race begins, okay? And now the scene opens on the wall of the city where David is. And David was sitting between the two gates, and there's a watchman that went up to the roof of the gate by the wall, and he's looking out that way, and he says, somebody's coming. And David said, if it's by himself, there is good news in his mouth. If it's just one guy, it's good news. And then a little later on, the watchman sees somebody else coming, and it's really beaten feet coming towards this city. And this guy says, "Behold, another man's coming." And the king said, "Well, this one also is bringing good news." Okay, but earlier you had said, if it's one guy, it's good news. And now you're saying, well, this one's bringing good news too. All right. And the watchman said, "I think the runner running is running like Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok." Apparently, this guy has a style of running that is easily identifiable at a distance. Maybe you have friends that way that can run that way that you can say, "Oh, that's so and so running." Or maybe it's just the speed that this guy is running that he say, "Well, this got to be that guy." We don't know what's identifying about the way he's running. But the king said, "This is a good man. He comes with good news." What information does David want? What telltale signs are we getting from David? What kind of information does he want? Exactly. He wants Absalom safe. He doesn't want anything happen. He wants good news. David wants good news from what's going on. And so finally, Ahimaaz actually gets there. The guy who said, "I just want to run," he finally gets there and beats the other guy. And he gets there huffing and puffing, I imagine. He says, "All is well." And he laid himself before the king, face to the ground, and said, "Blessed is is the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who lifted their hands against my lord the king." And the king said, "Is it well with the young man Absalom?" And Ahimaaz answered, "When Joab sent the king's servant and your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I didn't know what it was. Something happened, but I wasn't sure what was. Did he know? He probably knew, okay? This is sort of like dodging the answer, right? Something happened, there was some screaming, some shouting, a guy hanging from a tree, but I left before I really saw what actually all happened. So he's kind of not wanting to tell necessarily the whole story. So he's commanded to stand kind of at the side, and this other guy comes in, And he arrives, and he says, "Let the Lord my king receive good news, for the Lord has freed you for this day from the hand of all those who rose up against you." So that's good news. That's very good news. You've been liberated. It's great. You can go back to Jerusalem. We can all sleep in our own beds in a week from now. So that's great. And the king said to the Cushite, "Is it well with the young man Absalom?" And what was the answer? "Oh no, dude. He was hung in a tree and we poked him." What was his answer? What was his answer?
"They all be treated like him."
Yeah, exactly. So he's sort of in a nice roundabout way saying he's kind of he got what he deserved. Exactly. He's been punished. He got what he deserved. "Let the enemies of my lord and the king and all who rise up against you for evil be as that young man." And so it's a nice way of saying he's dead. He's dead. And so the king was deeply moved. He went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And he says, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom." I would that I would I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son Absalom. So he's moved, more concerned about Absalom than the 20,000 people plus people that had died. 20,000 plus people of your own countrymen that had died. He's more concerned about Absalom instead. And this, again, is going to kind of turn around and bite him as well. This is not good PR. Chapter 19, we start talking about, it's sort of this, Joab reproves David for his lament. And the king is, and so it was told to Joab, the king is weeping and mourns for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned to mourning for all the people. So what should have been victorious was turned into this grand kind of mourning situation. It was, instead of being happy that they had been victorious. Verse 3, so the people went by stealth into the city that day, as people who are humiliated steal away when they flee in battle. Okay, instead of this being a victorious entry into the city, they just sort of walk in as though no great thing had happened. David set the tone for this. It should have been a victorious victory, but David set the tone this way. So he's still weeping with a loud voice about Absalom. Then Joab came to the house of the king. So Joab has something to say. Joab has, you know, kind of been this counselor to David on other occasions. And in this moment, he says, today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants, who today have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters and the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines by loving those who hate you and by hating those who love you, for you have shown today that princes and servants are nothing to you. Pretty strong, right? It's kind of harsh. But did David need to hear that? It was sort of the Batman slap, pull yourself together, man, kind of speech at this moment. David needed to pull himself together. He needed to get things in perspective. Absalom got what he deserved. He deserved this. So David needs to put things in perspective on what's best for the nation, not what's best for David. And he does that. He goes back out and sits in the city gates. And he says, if Absalom says, if you don't go out there and put a game face on, paraphrasing, then it's going to be worse for you than with Absalom. Everybody's going to leave you if you don't go out there and make this right. And so he goes out there and sits in the gate and makes things right. Everybody comes to him. And so then everybody kind of restores that relationship with David. David is then, at this point, restored as king. But it's interesting that there's sort of they're slow to do this. And the people that should have taken him back fast did not. So in verse 11, the king David sent Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, speak to the elders of Judah. We're talking a lot in this moment between Judah and Israel. Judah and Israel. Judah and Israel. When we talk about that, who are we talking about in general? Judah, we're talking about basically the tribe of Judah and the Levites. And then we're talking about the 10 northern tribes as far as Israel's concerned. That's who we're talking about, what's going back and forth. And Judah is slow to accept David back as king. And why is that ironic? That they are slow to accept David back as king. What tribe is David from? Judah. These are his peeps. That he should have been accepted back by these people, and they're not accepting him back. And so the priests are reprimanding him, and he says, you are my brothers. You are bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? So he says, say to Amasa, are you not my bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh? May God do so to me. And so he places in that moment Amasa in place of Joab. So Amasa rises to the top and becomes the new commander of the army, and Joab gets moved down the bench. Okay, so he becomes third string quarterback, and Amasa comes into place. And this kind of appeases Judah. And they then at that time accept him, everything's good, and Joab gets moved down the bench in this situation. And so they return, all the servants, and then verse 15, they begin to return and come to the Jordan. And we will have to stop at 19.5 this evening, but we're going to talk about the return, why crossing the Jordan is so important, and what's going on with the return of David. Thank you very much for your time this evening.